Heard about this weird policy they have now at most universities? Back me up if you know what I'm talking about. This is this thing where if your roommate commits suicide, you get an automatic 4.0 for the semester. Yeah, apparently with a psychological trauma, they feel you deserve it. Can you believe this? Your roommate kills himself, and you get straight A's. This kind of takes the heat off finals, don't you think? This is like giving you a license to kill. I figured this out, you can go through 4 years, only kill 8 people, graduate with a summa cum laude.
Hey guys, welcome back to Spooky Tuesday, a weekly podcast where we're breaking down all of our favorite slashers, thrillers, monster movies, and black comedies on the new scariest day of the week. I'm Sydney Thompson.
I'm Monica Hyde.
And I'm Chelsea Death.
And today is a day. What day is it? Could it be a birthday?
A birthday.
A birthday of whom, you might ask? I don't know. Maybe just the absolute love of our lives. The one man who fully, truly inspired a whole feature and Segamunto.
Not Segamunto.
Matthew Lillard would love the word Segamunto, and you know it.
I think that's probably true.
No, I think it's probably true. It's absolutely true. You know, he would love it, and he would love it just be the same reason that I love it, because you two hate it so much.
That's not why he would love it.
Right. He would like to spite me for fun.
Exactly. And that's Maddie Lilly. But what Maddie Lilly movie are we watching? Did you think that I was asking you, Chelsea?
It's called a rhetorical question. Today on the pod, we're talking rhetorical questions.
Have you heard of them before? I haven't.
This is news to me. Okay. We are doing a truly hidden gem in Matthew Lillard's repertoire. And that is The Curve. Or Dead Man's Curve.
It has two names. There are two names, and no one knows about either of the names.
Nobody knows.
Yeah, I mean, they wanted to release it under Dead Man's Curve. That's what it premiered as at Sundance. But then there was another movie coming out the same year with like a similar plot, I guess. So they're like, oh, we'll
similar
just
name.
Change. Similar name. Not as they're not also doing a Curve storyline.
No.
Well,
the other one's like a
film,
comedy,
so.
I think, too.
This is a comedy.
This is not a comedy. This is the most serious movie I've ever seen. What are you talking about?
Yeah. But they changed the name, and the film has got lost in the sands of time, frankly.
Lost in the sauce.
So lost. I found it in college, though, because I don't remember how I found out, actually. But I went to Hopkins, and they filmed a lot of this at Hopkins. And so my friends and I were like, let's watch this weird, scary movie nobody's ever heard of that was filmed where we have like all of our classes. I think we were all speechless after the first time we watched it. And I remember everyone being like, this is the worst movie I've ever seen. But then I continued to show it to people because something in me knew that it was special. But the first time you guys saw it was when we watched it with our OG Spooky Crew. Is that right?
Yeah. During quarantine.
In our quarantine days.
And I can't believe that those people, what's wrong with them? That they said this is the worst movie that they ever saw. There is something about this movie that makes me like feel this way that it's kind of hard to put my finger on. It's definitely horny. That's a part of the vibe, but also like feral and insane. And I just kept pausing it to say everything I thought to James and Adam, poor things. Like, I just, I fucking love this movie so much.
Do you want to know why that thing that you couldn't describe what it is?
What is it?
Tell us.
Because it's a tight 90 movie.
Ooh. I just think that is sexy. It's so unhinged. And the friends that I watched it with the first time, I don't know that any of us were prepared or expected that even a little bit. But I think people who are maybe more familiar with the Maddie Lily repertoire were more ready to be like receptive of whatever you thought of the movie. I think this is like the Maddie Lily film. You know what I mean? He gives you two monologues. Agree. He's doing so much at all times. He's like peak psychosexual. Fuck with your brain, fuck your sexual. Girlfriend, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like, he's giving.
Here's the thing. Okay, one, the plot of this movie, in case you, like almost everybody else, have never seen this movie, is two college students kill their roommate and make it look like a suicide.
They don't even mention the 4.0 thing.
They don't.
They make you think that they've just spoiled the whole movie for you. But don't worry, honey, it's fine. There's a lot more to learn here. There's more to it than that.
So, but what we were saying earlier, I think Matthew Lillard's performance is this. Because this came out the year Scream was 96, right? 97. Yeah. So this was 2 years after Scream. So this was if Stu went to college.
Exactly.
Would get Tim.
No, literally. It is exactly that. They're like, remember at the end of Scream when everyone felt so horny for how crazy Stu was? Let's do that for 90 minutes. And I say, yes, 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 yes.
Okay, but 100%. Here's the thing. There's even one shot, like, near the end of the movie. So, for me, because this is, like, a tight 90 movie, this movie is broken out into, like, three different acts. Mm-hmm. The first 30 minutes, the middle 30 minutes, and the last 30 minutes. And in the last 30 minutes, there is a shot in this movie where, who was the other really boring guy? Chris?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like standing there, like adjusting like his shirt or whatever. And Matthew Lillard is like behind him the same way like Stu and Billy were in that shot.
It is the exact shot. It is the, what? I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. I paused it and I was like, that's the shot from Scream. That. Yes.
I squealed and it scared my cat.
You will be seeing a side by side of that on social. Please, Chelsea.
Please.
Please.
Give the people us what they want.
Well, this is a social clip, so I don't forget. I mean,
what if they change the tagline and it's not like this guy and this other guy kill their roommate? What if they change it to if Stu from Scream went to college? Like, that's right.
They change it to just, did you want more Stu? Watch this movie.
This is for you. You had a great rhyme opportunity there.
Oh. Did you want more Stu? This is
for you.
And there's monologues too.
Is that a haiku?
Wow. Use that. Just copy paste that into the 5-star review box.
This movie is
for you. That's six.
Needs one more.
For you too.
This movie is great for you. And there's monologues too. Sorry. We'll workshop it. I'll report back.
Okay, good.
There's monologues too. Just no and. Why didn't I? Duh. Wow. Anyway.
Wow. It's a haiku right there for you. It's gorgeous. Oh my God. Okay. All right. The thing about this movie, I love how it starts with like, no, there's nothing. There's nothing, and immediately you're in on the plot. There's no like, hello, I'm Tim, and this is Chris, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, hello, we're in the bathroom planning the murder of our friend Rand. Immediately. It's balls to the wall for 90 full minutes. Also, everyone is so hot in this movie.
Oh, yeah, they're all so hot.
Oh, my God.
And this is pre-Felicity. Carrie Russell too, like, this is right before Felicity, so she wasn't like Carrie Russell as we know her.
Oh my God, Carrie Russell
was earning that paycheck. She was making her name.
She's about to be in Cocaine Bear. Oh my God, She is the queen of the unhinged movie. We just didn't know. She had that serious streak for a while, but she's back with Cocaine Bear.
I think she did a lot of unhinged things in The Americans, but I didn't watch that show. But I do know that they 69'd at one point.
Oh, that's great.
I think, right?
That sounds wonderful.
Okay, but when are we doing Cocaine Bear on the pod?
As soon as it comes out, I think.
Okay, it comes out in February. Well, when does it come out? And we can't do it in February, so March.
Okay, March maybe.
Okay,
we're doing it in March. But yeah, everybody's hot. We got Matthew Lillard, duh, as Tim. We've got Michael Vartan as Chris. What else is he in? He is so hot to me, even though they made him look so nerdy in this somehow. It's just the pants. It's the weird shirt.
Never been kissed.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's where he's from.
Also, that's Rand's so real name is Randall. Randall Battenkoff. And he is incredibly hot. Sorry. And what? Did he ever do anything again? I don't know.
Oh, Chris was in Bates Motel. Just 6 episodes, but still, that's fun.
Here's the thing. If you willingly, sorry to all our other Rands that listen, that name screams douchebag to me a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm. It does. Is Randy better?
Yes.
Randy's friendlier.
Yeah.
That's true.
Like Randy Newman.
Also, why not just say Randall? Because then you can say it like, you hear how I just like kind of rolled the L, Randall. Doesn't that sound kind of exciting? And also reminds me of the villain in Monsters,
Inc. Yes.
And he's kind of hot in his own way if you're into lizards, which I am. So I'm just being honest in 2023.
You have to tell the truth.
I have to tell the truth.
He was also in the original Buffy movie. So that's cool.
That's good.
Oh, I haven't seen the Buffy movie yet. I got to like the end of season 3. I got to the episode before the musical episode and then I stopped watching it.
Before the musical episode?
I know, I didn't get to it. I just happened to stop the episode before that episode. Tam is very mad at me. Don't worry. I've already heard this from her.
Just throw in one more episode.
Also, I found out today Pedro Pascal is on an episode of Buffy and I had no idea. He's about 1 year old in the episode. Very exciting.
And I just watched The Last of Us. He's great.
Me too. It was so good. Anyway. But yeah, I mean, immediately, you know what's going on. We're in on the game right away. But in case you didn't know already, basically, apparently, and I don't think this is true, especially after this movie came through. If your roommate, while you are in college, commits suicide, you get an automatic 4.0 grade point average. And so, as the comedy little special at the very beginning of this movie explains, like, it's basically just asking you to kill them. Which, you know, I would never want to go to Harvard so bad to have that plague my conscience for the rest of my life, but I guess I'm different.
But do you want to go to Harvard in the first place? Because there you go.
Well, that's exactly the question.
Okay, but also I was thinking about this. This would make a really fun movie to watch and turn into a drinking game. At every time Harvard is mentioned, you drink. Mm.
Wow.
It is mentioned.
That's such a good idea.
So many times throughout this movie.
It can't be a shot per Harvard because you'd be dead. But a sip, I think, could work.
Yeah, a drink.
A chug, maybe.
Yeah, a little chug, and then every time Matthew sticks his tongue, no, every time somebody smokes a cigar, you also have to take a little sippy, because I think that this was, you know, funded by Big Tobacco. There was so much cigar smoking. They're like, we're going to use sexy Matthew Lillard to make the youth of the 90s get into cigars. It's not just for your dad, kids. It's for you.
It's just so funny because they literally have a character who is quitting smoking in the film, but by the end, they've just driven her right back to smoking again.
She has fully given up. After what she's seen, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I think this movie is so worth watching without knowing anything for the first time. I think absolutely everyone who hasn't seen this movie should pause this episode and go watch the film first before continuing. Seriously. Because you have to see it for yourself. That said, I need us to be sharing spoilers from this point forward because it so informs every moment of the film. Like, I mean, I have to talk about it now. I need you to go watch it for yourself before you hear me spoil it for you. No,
seriously, like, this is probably one of my favorite movies. And, like, you gotta go in and just experience it. Like, Adam walked away yesterday right as the reveal happened, and I was like, you little bitch. And I rewind it, and I was like, get back in the room right now. I don't care if you were only half watching. You need to watch this. So I'm saying that to you now, you little bitch. Pause the podcast and go watch the movie. It'll only take you a tight 90.
Tight 90.
Everybody's favorite.
But yeah, I mean, okay, spoilers, that was your warning. The thing that is so wonderful about the beginning of this movie, like Monica was saying, it opens and you... Monica, that's your name. That's how I've always said it. The way this movie opens, you feel like it is immediately being like, here is what the murder is going to be. Here's who the killers are. Here are their motivations. And here's the plan. And you're like, okay, now we're just going to watch it play out. Actually, guess what? It is tricking you from the very first moment. Whoever you think the killers are gonna be, it's gonna change at least a couple of times. Okay.
Literally, there's like three twists in five like seconds or four.
The way they just go, you thought what was, yeah, it's like act one, here's what you think the movie is about. Act two, actually, what if the characters turned on each other? Act three. Oh, you thought you knew what the movie was about? No, you didn't. JK.
Let me just bitch slap you with what's actually happening.
Yeah. Just wild, though, the setup. Okay, because, again, full spoilers. We gave you your warning. We talked generally about spoilers for a few minutes. I'm going to say things now. So, truly, that was your chance. It sets up Chris and Tim colluding to kill their roommate Rand for their 4.0. Meanwhile, obviously, Rand is in on it the whole time. The way that they do all these little hints that you see from the beginning, once you can watch it with your eyes open, it is incredible. But they set up Rand. It's a masterclass. They set up Rand to be such a fucking douchebag that you're like rooting for him to die. But then also Tim is so terrible. And then Tim is like trying to fuck over Chris for seemingly no good reason for a minute.
Sociopathic. Like every move he makes, like he's so good at playing up all these different emotions, like right at the right time. Oh, terrifying.
One of the things that I will say, you know how we were with Don't Worry, Darling, Florence Pugh just like out acted everybody else in that movie, basically. Yeah. That was Matthew Lillard. Matthew Lillard is this movie's Florence Pugh.
Oh,
that
he
said,
carried
I don't
this movie on his back, honey.
He did.
yes, and he did. But I feel like everybody else is doing a pretty good job too.
Oh yeah. No, I don't think that anyone did a bad performance in this.
Sydney shook her head, though. Sydney, no. Name names.
Chris.
Well, but he's kind of doing a whole thing where we're not seeing his whole story until the end either. So that's a little hard to...
I think he's playing it like all dumb, but that's because...
But even if you're playing dumb, you don't have to be boring.
Boring was a character choice.
Yeah, he was just supposed to be a boring guy. He's a nerd.
But here's the thing. When you're put up, especially, like, the girls are fine, know what I mean? Like, they're there. But when you are acting and you have Matthew Lillard, who is just, like, on 100p the entire literal movie, and then you have, like, the outburst of Rand at the party... Even when the drinking game that they're playing, the Russian roulette, but with beer cans, great.
Such a dude thing to do.
But know what I mean? Like,
I was like, this looks like a
even
fun game.
Boring during that, and everybody else is like so much better.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think it is not. I personally think it is not a bad performance. I just think it is a small performance.
Yeah, I think he's playing the straight man, you know, just to make Matthew's character seem all the more outlandish and
also unhinged. To like fly under the radar for Tim a little bit.
Totally. He's so boring, you'd never suspect
that he is also a double cross. Yeah. Terry Russell, I think, is doing an incredible performance where in hindsight, you can see her having these like stone cold cunty moments. You know what I mean? Like, it looks like nothing the first time around. It looks like she's just, you know, moving through life. The second time around, like when she's in the bathroom preparing to go tell Natalie that she's pregnant, you see her. She's not taking a moment to be ready to deliver this scary news to her friend. She's taking a moment to be like, and now my plan is set into motion.
Yeah, no, I agree. But like, I don't know. I want to talk about the beginning before we talk about the end too much.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Because I just think the beginning is super hilarious. Though the subject matter is super bleak. Because basically you hear the voice of someone in the therapy, and does it end up that's Rand who was asking all those questions, or what? No,
it was Chris.
It was Chris. Yeah. Sorry, I got confused at the end because there's also a therapy thing with Rand.
There's so many therapy things.
But Chris is like, yeah. So like, what? Are some signs that my roommate might be suicidal, and she starts listing all these different things. She's like, yeah, basically anything from the 80s, like any music from the 80s, Scandinavian films. I was dying. And then there is one that really shined for me, and I was like, okay. She said anything from a first-time writer director, and I was like, is this movie from a first-time writer director? If it is, that's the funniest thing ever. And it is. His name is Dan Rosen, and that was really funny, Dan. This is brilliant film, and I'm sorry that it didn't get the shine that it needed. We talked about this a little bit before we started recording, but while I was watching it this time, sometimes I'm not the most observant bitch in the world. So only on this watch, I realized that this is a square movie. The movie is a square. And I was like, what the fuck is this aspect ratio happening right now? I was like, was this made for the square televisions of the 90s? Was this a made for TV movie? And y'all gave me the answer, but tell them.
So this movie did have what, like a Sundance release?
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, it was only released on VHS. And I don't know if I like heard or read somewhere that it might have been like a Blockbuster exclusive.
So, like, oh,
only get it from Blockbuster.
Sexy.
I can't believe this was shelved like that. That's so mean. I feel like this could have. I mean, you can make an argument that Maddie went too hokey at some points, but I disagree, and those people are wrong, and I'll slap them in the face. But I feel like this could have been like a big thing for Matthew's career. Not that he didn't have an amazing career for the rest of his whole life after it, but he's like the star of this movie, you know? And he it's usually is relegated to a strong supporting character. And so I wish this could have had the shine that it deserved, because he is such a great actor and he like fucking goes there with it. It just makes me
I think
mad.
He gets top billing too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's the main face on the poster in some of them. There's many iterations of the poster. But my favorite one is the one where it's him looming over the whole thing with a cigar sticking out of his mouth with the most unhinged look you've ever seen on his face.
And it's perfect.
It's perfect. But I just like, they're like, oh, you said Depeche Mode, this, that, the other thing. Let's buy all of that and plant it in Rand's stuff. Genius. No one will see
oh you
us
listen
doing
to
this.
the cure the Smiths, you're out here like Susan Vega, man, it's rough.
So sad. And you know, when you're watching this, you're like, wow, things are really working out well for Tim and Chris, because like the girl, what's the girlfriend's name? I'm
Natalie.
So sorry. Natalie.
Poor Natalie.
Natalie being pregnant, like, sorry. But that does help their case for the whole making this look like a believable thing. And like watching it, I was like, wow, that's a good stroke of luck for them. And now I know that nothing is luck and everything is planned and there are no coincidences.
Well, actually, I have a question about that. And again, it does kind of circle back to the end a little bit, if that's okay. Shall I save it? Or should I just ask it? I'm asking you.
Just that. Oh.
Okay. So we know at the end that Emma, Carrie Russell, has colluded at least a little bit with Tim. Like, she shows up with Tim at the end, and then Rand comes out of the shadow. So Tim and Emma have been working together. Emma seems genuinely surprised when Rand is like, actually, I've been working with Chris, but do you want to get on board or not? So I wonder, like, she came up with the pregnancy thing. Like, she made that up. Did she and Tim talk about that? And, like, did they sort of plan that between the two of them? Because Tim was so instrumental in, like, getting Natalie to blurt it out and, like, talking about it with Natalie ahead of the time. Or do you think that it was just, like, two kind of separate plots that later collided?
100% they collaborated. I think 100% they collaborated because, so there's this moment where Emma and Chris are asleep in bed together, obviously in the same room as Tim.
Oh,
because
yeah.
They're all roommates. And Emma wakes up and makes weird fucking intense eye contact with Tim. Big,
oh my God.
Sexy eye
that
contact.
Scene, I was like, I would like to wake up to that.
Yeah.
With, like,
was
her
smoking the cigar
on her shoulder also.
Uh-huh. It was sexually charged, for sure. So I definitely think that was a very
is
knowing look.
Torch?
And I was like, what the fuck? But it's like a blink and it's not blinking, you missed it, but like they move on so quickly that you forget that that moment happened. So you don't
that
really
you're
think,
just like, what was that about?
You're just like, man, Tim being a freak again. No shock there. But also another thing, I think that Tim and Emma hooking up and having, am I ready to talk about this? Is it too is it too
it's
soon?
Such a sexy scene.
Oh my God. Oh, I yeah. Literally, this scene changed my life. I'm getting okay. Here's a little backstory for me. The time that I was the most feral in 2022 was that scene in Euphoria where Dominic Fike is teaching Hunter Schafer's character how to eat pussy, and he licks Hunter Schafer's hand like it's a pussy, and I lost my mind. So there is some hand licking is my thing, because in this scene,
when
it's
in the bar.
Yeah.
Tim and Emma in the bar, and they're super, super drunk, and he, like, does, like, the salt for a tequila shot off of her hand. Like, he licks her hand, puts the salt on her hand, licks it off of her hand, and they take the shots together, and then they share the lime. I thought I was going to pass out. I thought I was going to black out.
Was this movie sponsored by tequila?
No, sponsored by cigars.
Tequila.
About this.
A little tequila for ya.
Yeah.
Tequila. I mean,
but
alcohol and tobacco and firearm, ATF. Oh my God.
Oh,
something's
yeah.
happening here. There's guns. But, there's alcohol.
They're bad boys and girls.
Cigars and cigarette products.
But I think that they, like, were so comfortable together, like, sexually so quickly that I feel like they already had, like, that, not necessarily a sexual relationship, but like
a flirtation,
conspiracy between them that made it so easy for that to happen that night. Because I don't know, before that it seemed like Emma and Chris, you know, she at least liked Chris a lot.
She liked Chris, but his how do I say this politely, he was struggling with erectile dysfunction, and she was not getting dick down the way that she needed to be.
Yeah.
The way that she truly, I think, needed to be, because mm-hmm. she sure went looking, you know.
And if she went looking, he clearly wasn't doing other things, like eating pussy.
What we saw in that scene, he just gives up, and she's like, okay, what about me?
Yeah, there's other things you could do to uh-huh. apologize for this, and
or you don't need to apologize.
No, but like, not apologize, but like make it right, you know. Come on. Mm-hmm. Time's away.
If you want to be having a sexual relationship with your lady and your dick is not doing what you're asking of it, you sure have got other body parts.
The art
you have
of
other options. Oh,
also there's other things.
Bring fingering back 2023. I'm so sorry, but
no, it needs
to be. I don't really know why it should ever have been off the menu.
Ugh.
People have been focusing on other things and they were wrong to do that.
Exactly. Also, a nice combo a nice combo. I'm just saying.
Combo pack is always great. But yeah, I really, to answer your question, I think they collab in more ways than one.
Okay. I'm super willing to believe that. And yeah, I mean, I think the tension must have been building between them for a while. We know Tim has absolutely no issue going after other people's girlfriends. Earlier in the movie, he like steals a kiss from Natalie by being like, oh, kiss on the cheek. And then he turns his face and like big kiss on the mouth.
Oh, yeah.
And she was not mad. Just to be clear, she was like,
just a flirty guy. This is just how Tim is.
And then, of course, Rand walks up right the fuck then. Which, like, knowing what we know now, god damn, this shit is so fucked up.
Layers.
Yeah.
Also, it doesn't surprise me that this movie premiered in Sundance because it is trying to do some art house shit, and I think it's succeeding, okay? I think this is a highbrow
film. Monologue.
Well, the monologue, but we're not there yet. I'm talking about the paintings. They do a lot of stuff with art in this where, like, there'll be a scene where something dramatic just happened. For example, what I was just talking about when the pregnancy is confessed to Tim and he steals a kiss. And then it zooms in on this painting in the background that's like this orange background with all these heads doing weird stuff, and that one I didn't take enough time to like totally understand what the like significance of that painting was. I was just like, that's a creepy painting. But later on in the film they do the exact same thing, and it's this painting with three men.
Yeah,
and one man is looking the other way, and the other two men are staring at each other and laughing, and it seems like they're like laughing behind his back. And I just like, I don't know, it's a little on the nose, but I liked it.
Yeah.
It's like something's not up to snuff. Something's fishy. But I think that I don't know, watching this knowing what's gonna happen is always so fun. But I couldn't exactly remember like every detail of the twist because it's been over 2 years. But let's talk about Rand's death, scare quotes, scene on the cliff. One thing I have to say is UCLA did not have enough cliffs. Seems like a cool place to hang out. Seems like a place where many people would die though. So again, good planning on Tim and Chris's part. But it was so shady, the tequila part, because like Matthew literally gives the wrong bottle to Rand at first, and Rand doesn't clock that. I guess he's already pretty drunk because he just found out that his girlfriend's pregnant. But again, then if they're all in on it, he's just acting this whole fucking time. Think about that.
Yeah. Here's right? the okay. I've seen this movie probably 4 or 5 times now, but the last time I saw it was when we watched it like 2 years ago, at least, or maybe 3 years ago at this point, or almost at least. And the time before that was like, I don't know, 7 years ago in college. But I forgot about the quote unquote rat poison bit, but I was trying to track the bottles because I remembered the reveal and the who's who of it all. They have 3 tequila bottles. Tim tells Chris that 2 of them are like something in lemon juice. And then 1 of them is real tequila. And then Rand starts drinking it and he spits it out just like Chris did when he tried it in the kitchen, because Tim convinced him to do a shot of quote unquote real tequila, just 1, even though they said they weren't going to drink. And then he spits it out and Tim goes, too much lemon juice. So when he spit it out, I was like, oh, he's got the fake one. And then he's like, this tastes funny. And he's like, oh, and they do the swapsy. But then he goes, oh, I put rat poison in it. But I noticed that Chris wasn't drinking his bottle at all. And I was like, okay, does Chris have the real rat poison one? Because obviously I know that Rand survives. And so Rand cannot really have been drinking rat poison. But also Tim knows that Rand is going to survive too. So maybe none of them have rat poison.
Because it's right? a triple gotcha. Like
they're Tim all lemon juice.
Was fucking gotcha. Yeah, Tim and Chris together were fake fucking over Rand. And Rand and Tim were secretly working together. But actually it was Rand and Chris who were actually secretly working together. Like, it's like, well, fuck, I can't even say it. It's so confusing.
It is a little funny to think that they're all there together, 100% sober, all pretending to be trashed. Every single one of them is pretending for at least one person's their sort of benefit. That said, I wouldn't be surprised if Tim actually was drinking, because he knew he was not gonna really have to like roll anybody over the edge of the cliff. He knew if he could like trick Chris to looking away and being nauseous for a moment, then Rand could just like skedaddle.
I also think that I think that Tim just like said the rat poison thing to fuck with Chris even more. Because he's all these psychological games for the whole like middle third of the movie, right? Where he's just like fucking with Chris to make Chris nervous, to frame Chris, to do all these other things. So that could just be one more thing to make Chris freak out, because like a great point that Adam brought up while we were watching is he's like, it's so fucking botched for them to give him rat poison, because then he's dead before he hits the water, so he won't have water in his lungs when they find the body, so they'll know that he was dead before he hit the water, and so then it's not a suicide. But then they kind of explain that away because there is the suicide note, and like they could be like, oh, he drank rat poison as part of it, you know? But like, I think
then stumbled over the edge. Yeah,
I think it was just to fuck with Chris all the more, because he's a master manipulator.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Tim is telling Chris, you and I are in this together, and he's fucking with Chris from the very first moment, because the first like thing that we see on screen is Chris checking his grade, seeing that it's a B+, going into the bathroom and being like, yeah, I got an A, we don't need to do our murder plot. And Tim is like, actually I checked your, he's being like, oh, like, phew, you didn't want to do it anyway, oh, I also wanted to back out, just kidding, bitch, I saw your grade, we have to go through with this. So he already thinks that Chris is gonna pussy out if given the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so now he's creating this scenario where he's like, not only does Chris think they're sort of in on this suicide together, but then immediately when the cops come around, he's being like, oh, Chris, like, weren't you closer with Rand? Didn't you run after Rand at the party? So he's setting up this pseudo murder plot from that moment too. And you have to wonder if it is just for fun, or if he is like, Chris, who wants to pussy out, is like gonna confess to the police, or is gonna rat both of us out. Like, I have to like blackmail him into staying in this scheme by taking full responsibility when and if they quote found Rand's body, which obviously they're not gonna, that was never gonna happen. My God, trying to unweave all of the little bits and the motivations. No,
that's why I think this is such a fun movie, and the twist is so great, because like there's so many, you start doubting naturally in the third of the film. You're doubting like Tim, because obviously he's insane. He's doing all this shit to fuck with Chris. And then you start thinking about it, or at least I was. Like, okay, Rand and Tim have known each other their entire lives.
Since fifth grade.
He's known Chris, 4 years tops? Maybe less than that. You don't make all the same friends freshman year. I sure didn't keep in a lot of those guys. But anyway, like, he's really gonna fucking kill his friend for his entire life for this guy that he's known for 4 years? Like, that doesn't really make sense. Like, when you put two and two together, like, why would he choose him over Rand? Unless the jealousy is that strong. And so that's why it's an extra gotcha when, like, yeah, of course he wasn't actually gonna rat out his oldest friend, but Rand is a fucking psychopath as well. He's a wild card. But yeah, I mean, I think this is a good time to talk about the most artistic moment of the entire film. Because like we talked about, there are two unbelievable Maddie Lilly monologues in this movie. And the first one is, oh God, it's so good. It's right after Rand has died, and right after the funeral, right?
They have a little vigil for him. Yeah.
Yeah, they have a vigil and they all go back to the bar. So it's insert girlfriend's name here. What's her name?
Natalie.
Natalie. God, why can't I remember that?
It's so okay. It's Natalie.
Natalie, Emma, Chris, and Tim. And Natalie's like really fucked.
And Rand. No, not Rand. Why did I say that?
Rand's dead. Rand's
why
dead.
Why did I say
His
that?
Spirit is with them. Rand's dead in scare quotes. And Rand's spirit.
I mean.
And they're all like reminiscing and it's so like they're it's sweet. Natalie's like getting over being so angry at him because that he died when they're in the middle
He's
of a fight.
Such a dick to her at all opportunities in this movie.
He pushes her when she's pregnant.
Yeah, like, but even horrible. Before that, he's just constantly being like, you're stupid, you little dumb bitch, you little stupid hoe.
Oh my God, when they were playing Taboo or whatever, and he was like, you're so fucking dumb, we only got two. I'm like, okay, that game is hard.
But they were playing the hardest possible. Why are there senators in there?
Yeah, she's Canadian. She doesn't know U.S. senators, and she shouldn't have to know.
I'm American, and I barely want to even know who the U.S. senators are.
Seriously. I also love just like
the chairman the of the Fed
jokes.
Like,
the Canadian jokes throughout this are mean, but they're very funny. It's like, yeah, that French girl, the cop says. And I'm like, she's Canadian. Yeah, it's all the same thing. It's like, she's from Toronto.
The best one is when Chris is like, she's Canadian. And the cop goes, she's from Canada? It's like, yeah, that's what that means. You guys have heard of this before.
unknown to most, Canadian does mean from Canada. But yeah, she's finally starting to feel like, you know, she's feeling like sentimental towards Rand, being like, oh, he was so sweet. They're sharing all these stories. They're laughing. And then Maddie Lily, our boy, Tim, is like, I'm going to tell you a story about high school. And you're going to love this story about our boy. Oh, he's just such a great guy. And goes on to tell the most fucked story ever. Just so fucked. Basically, Randall was with a girl like all 4 years of high school.
Wendy.
She didn't let him down so easy. Said we should just be friends a week before prom. And he's like, okay, we'll go as friends. And so she waits all night for him to come and pick her up to go to prom in her dress. All that jazz, and he never shows up because
waits with the whole neighborhood. Yeah. He says
the whole neighborhood waited. Her little sister looking up at Wendy like, oh, Wendy. And meanwhile, Rand has taken a
sex worker.
How do I say this? A sex worker
Hooker.
Who is described.
That's what he literally says.
He yes. uses the meanest possible language that he can at any given point.
Really mean, yeah, like a very degrading description of a hooker, and took her to prom instead and took pictures of her and all this stuff, and it destroyed this girl so much that she never came back to school and therefore did not finish and had to do summer school, which delayed her acceptances to college, and she didn't go to college for another year after that. And he's telling this story. And it's incredible. And I don't know. I think I was drunk the first time I watched this movie, so it didn't really click for me. But as he is telling this story, Dan Rosen, my guy, the background noise ceases to exist. All of the bar noise, gone. Silence. Slowly, the background that you could see, the rest of the bar, fades to black. The light is just, it's just this bright white above Matthew Lillard's face, and then it slowly pans in, so it's just his like floating head, Vincent Price style, on this black background as he tells the worst story you've ever heard. And it spoke to me on a spiritual level. Oh my God,
I had chills.
Art, play, put that on my tombstone, play that as part of my funeral video.
Except for the part, what was it, where he's like, you know how like the something of the upper class, what is that? He said this little like quip.
Yeah, I think I wrote something about it in my notes. I'm just a casualty of the upper class.
Oh my
wait,
God.
That's the second monologue, actually.
Oh yes, the second one.
Oh, that's monologue number two. That's monologue
number two. But I think I think I like the first monologue better just because they really nailed the artistism on it.
Yes. For the visual appeal, love the first monologue. But you have to give it to the second monologue. He does quote Alanis Morissette.
He does quote Alanis Morissette. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Longer than I remembered. Like, monologues are already long. It's longer than I remembered. And it just keeps going and going. And I'm like, go ahead, boy. Keep giving it to him.
Yeah.
It's insane.
But yeah, I mean, the first one is so gorgeous to watch. It is, and the way that it sucks you in, and the way that you feel like you are alone with Matthew Lillard telling this horrible fucking story about a horrible person being horrible, the way it cuts to Emma's face, very little reaction, the way it cuts to Natalie's face, tears streaking down her cheeks. My God. My God.
It was incredible.
You were just starting to maybe feel bad for Rand. He was terrible, but he got murdered, and that's sad. No, here's a reminder of why you should not feel bad for Rand. Except later in the second monologue, it is revealed that Rand never even did that. It was Tim all along.
You're like, that actually scans. You're like, that fully scans. Correct. Yeah.
The way that Tim is just reveling in telling this story designed to make you feel terrible, only for him to secretly, privately, in his own head, be like, and it was me. And I did that.
And it was and me. I'm responsible. All along.
Yeah. I created this terrible feeling in you, and I created the story in the first place by being a horrible fucking person.
Yeah,
he loves to inflict pain. Oh, and he's really good at it, and he looks really good doing it, which is, you know,
so good doing. He's saying the worst things I've ever heard, and I'm just still like, whatever you want, you can have it.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the whole monologue is obviously so horrible, haunting, fucked up, delicious. That's actually the moment where that painting of the guys playing cards comes in too, because I just looked at my notes, which is such an interesting choice of like placement for it, you know what I mean? But they do lots of things early on, like I said, to hint that like something is not right here. Like Matty Lily is, you know, he loves to be big. And so you think Tim is like giving things away constantly, like before this monologue, even that morning before Natalie finds out that Rand is quote unquote dead, she storms into their dorm room and she's like so mad about the way that Rand treated her, as she should be. And Tim is like, oh, you're almost like so mad you could push him off a cliff, right? He just like loves to be such a little bitch. But yeah, I mean, after that story fucked her up so bad that she just gets her little suitcase, sits on the steps of Gilman Hall where they have the vigil for a minute, and then heads on over to the lighthouse herself and is like, well, I guess he fucked that girl up and now I'm permanently fucked up and I just don't know what else to do at this point. Am I gonna have the baby of this? She's already basically said like, I'm Catholic, I can't have an abortion. But this baby would be the child of that man that she's just heard about being so horrible, who was horrible to her. Yeah, I mean,
fuck.
It's grim for her. It's grim for
she
her.
Literally, she walks off the cliff with the suitcase in hand, which was
tragic.
Yeah, really fucked image, but effective, very effective. But it also makes a lot of sense watching it again in hindsight, like Tim's reaction to when she kills herself. Because when Natalie kills herself, because like, you know, if he wasn't already having this whole behind the scenes thing with Emma that we've now decided is true, you know, even if he's a total sociopath, he'd be like, oh fuck, we caused the death of somebody else now. But he moves past it immediately. He just explains it away immediately. So that makes all the more sense to me now that was all mm-hmm. part of their design from the get, which is so fucked up. They're like, how many people can we get? How many people can we knock off to get our 4.0s? Amazing. Where's Kerry Russell trying to go to school that she needs a 4.0? See,
Harvard.
None of my friends went to grad school right away after college. So this was not an issue. We weren't thinking of our futures.
Yeah, everybody had to wait a couple more years and then panic about their lives and then go to grad school.
Exactly, sure.
Like I'm doing now.
Like any other normal adult.
But it is actually an interesting, it's not an Easter egg per se, but it's an interesting little clue early on with Emma, because in that opening scene, not opening, but the scene with her and Natalie in their room, where Natalie's like, I'm pregnant. Are you sure? She's like, I'm pre-med. Of course I'm sure. That's her little hint. She's like, I'm pre-med. Zoom in on the poster on the wall behind them. You didn't win second place. You lost first place or whatever.
But also, when at like the very end, when Rand is talking to the therapist, she's like, I guess that's what they would have wanted, all of us going to Harvard together. So all it three of them Natalie were going wanted. To Harvard.
Natalie would not have wanted this. I can speak for Natalie. I feel confident in that. She would not have wanted all these little bitches to go.
Yeah.
She wouldn't have wanted a single one of these little bitches to go.
Not a single one.
No, they don't deserve it. They really don't.
I do think Chris felt genuinely bad about
admission.
I do think Chris felt genuinely bad about Natalie, though. I think that was real.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he didn't know. He wasn't in on that part of the plan. He wasn't in on the Emma part of the plan. And that's why it's all the more fucked up that, like, you know, this the second act of this movie is the Tim psychological torture of Chris part of the movie. And then Emma supposedly grows a conscience after realizing that she sucked Tim's dick in front of Chris. And that's just unfortunate.
That scene, though, I know we touched on the beginning part of it, but we did not talk enough about how Maddie Lily is making such strong eye contact with Chris through the slats the door when he's hiding in the closet, as Kerry Russell immediately like hits her knees on the ground in front of him.
That scene killed me because for Adam's birthday, we went on a trip for his 30th birthday. And there was a moment where I like was making out with Adam. And little did I know, Adam's eyes were wide open and he was locked eyes with my friend Jackson. And Jackson was just like, what the fuck is going on right now? It's like this terrifying power move. And we joked about it like the whole rest of the trip. It was just like by accident, I don't know. And I was just like, okay, that Adam. Is like, that's the next step. That's the next step up. He's such a sociopath. And the fact that he had Chris decorate the entire room for him to get his dick sucked by Chris's girlfriend. Like, thank you for setting the scene. This is so cute.
He trolled him so hard. Yeah.
Totally. I think that's like the prime example of being cucked.
Oh my God. I just think Tim is having so much fun in Act Two. Because I also love the part where he is like loudly arguing with Emma, and like we see the guidance counselor sitting like just one chair over, because she is an essential part of their plot. I mean, she has confidentiality, so there's only so much she can reveal, although she's a little bit stretching what confidentiality covers and does not cover.
Yeah.
If I said to the therapist, I'm going to kill the president, I'm pretty sure that they have an obligation to report that. But yeah, she says, I'll take your secret to my grave, baby. But yeah, I mean, that bit is great. I think when he has the gun in the second monologue, it's great. That part I love, because in the moment, what we think after the blowjob scene is that Emma has helped Chris try to catch Tim in his frame job, but actually Emma is working with Tim. And so if you pay attention, Tim doesn't actually say anything on the record about how he did it. He just goes, oh, you wanted a 4.0 so bad, Chris? Oh, I'm so terrible. I have never had any good friends in my life. That's when he says, I'm just a victim of the upper class. And he's like, you want a 4.0 so bad? I guess I'll just kill myself. But Chris is the one who's kind of admitting to things on there and trying to get, like, clearly he's admitting to knowledge of the crimes at the very least.
Yeah.
And Tim is the one just snaking by once again, he thinks, at least. I mean, again, every time a character thinks that they're in on something, there's a really good chance that they're not.
It's not fair because he is really good at being evil, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's really good at it. He's so good at being manipulative and fucked up and conniving. But then, like, were they better? I don't know if they were better. They just knew who he was.
Yeah.
They had his, there's a phrase that I'm trying to say and I can't remember what it is. They got his goat. They got his goat. I don't think that's what I was trying to say. That's it. They had his number. Thank you.
Yeah.
That was gonna really bother me.
I think that they keep saying about how Chris was the one who, like, started joking about it, ha, 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 Rand, what if you died by suicide? Then I could get my 4.0 and go to Harvard Business School, which it's just like, okay. But that, I guess, we're supposed to believe is what meant to spark the thing, but clearly Tim glommed onto it. So I kind of think when they realized that Tim glommed onto it super hard, they were like, Tim is legit gonna do a murder. Probably we should collude behind his back because he's gonna do it to one of us one way or another. So we really need to be working against him.
He showed his cards too much.
Yeah, he's going to be trying to do a murder and you're not going to trust him to have loyalty to his colluder. So we have to be collaborating behind his back.
Totally. No, they're like, this guy, I look at him immediately. I know he has the capacity to kill. There's just no question about it. Is he sexy? Yes. Could he kill me? Of course. It's clear. So, yeah, I mean, he shouldn't have been just so outwardly unhinged the whole time, but it's hard to keep that in when you've got that much raw energy inside of you. So we can't blame Tim too much.
And again, he's been friends with Rand since fifth grade. So, like, the story with the sex worker at prom, I'm sure, is one of many, many, many examples of Tim revealing who he was at different points along the way.
Yeah, and then we get the final act where the double, triple, whatever reveal of the twist.
The reveal. The
twist, you're twist, twisting twist, so twist. Hard, you snap your neck. Like, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. I remember being truly and totally shocked, and I like thinking that I'm so smart that I can figure everything out, but I never saw this shit coming. God, I love the it's such a slow second reveal. Like, first, immediately you have Rand show up, and
that's not even the first one. It's like, Chris thought he was working with Emma to catch Tim, who he thought was framing him. No, Emma's working with Tim. So the first reveal is Emma tricked you, Chris, and then Rand shows up, and it's like, and Tim tricked you also. And then they're like backing him to the edge. They've got the gun. Got the gun or whatever.
And Tim is so confident. He's like in the middle. He's like, I'm flanked on either side by my homies. Nothing can stop me. I'm fucking batshit nuts. It's just so good. Like, what's the line? We're like, how was West Palm Beach? Hey Rand, how is West Palm Beach? Or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the way that scene plays out is incredible too, because once they have the Rand reveal, it actually cuts back to the counselor, who is fully smoking by this point. Like, we saw her first scene, she's like eating licorice. We see her at one moment, she's got like a nicotine patch, she's sucking on a lollipop. Like, we see her trying all of these smoking alternatives throughout the film. At one point, one of the cops comments on it and is like, that thing works. And she's like, is that your first question? At the end, fully given up. She's so fucking over it. And as the twists are revealed, you understand why she is like, I'm so sorry. I need this more than I need to not have lung cancer years down the road. Because it has Rand talking to the counselor and he's like, I can't believe what happened. First, Natalie. And there's this kind of implied, and then Chris, as we're watching Rand and Tim and Emma walk Chris to the edge of the cliff. But it's not Aunt Chris.
That's what she
Yeah. And then my roommate. And then they reveal it's not even the roommate that you thought it was going to be a moment ago.
Dun, dun, dun.
Again, they stick the knife in and they twist it back and forth and back and forth. And you're dead by the end of the movie. Pretty much.
But I just... One of my favorite moments, I think, in the whole thing, Matthew Lillard, again, it's his film. He fucking rules it. To me, it is the Matthew Lillard film. But when Chris has the gun on him and he's like, one more step and I'll shoot. And Tim goes, one. And then he does his little shuffle forward. That, to me, is worthy of an Oscar all on its own.
So true.
A little shimmy shimmy. I love that
part. Yes. The way he just like, boop, boop, boop. And then... Emma's line, it figures you'd shoot blanks after he tries to fake shoot himself. She's so mean too. She's such a little cunt. She's
so mean. God, see, Tim and her were perfect for each other. Honestly, the tragedy that they didn't end up together. This is truly a Romeo and Juliet tale when you also, think about it.
When you think about it, Chris is just as mean, just less directly. So I do think him and Emma don't not belong together at the end.
I don't think that he's down with her, though. Otherwise, I don't know.
Well, they're walking together across campus.
Well, I have to keep up appearances at this point. She's got a lot to lose.
I think he's down. And I think his... Well, that's one of my discussion questions I'll save for later, is his dick back in working order. But let's finish talking about the end first. Because I just think the way that they do it, is it's so back to back to back to back, but what's really fun is just the way that they do it. Like, Tim has written this suicide note for Chris that he comes over and sticks in Chris's pocket, and then when Chris and Rand have turned the tables, Chris takes it out of his pocket and puts it in Tim's pocket. Like, it's just beautiful. I mean, I have to hope that they didn't sign anybody's names or put too many details in there, but if Tim is the one who wrote it, it's in Tim's handwriting anyway.
Well, don't they say, like, we have a note for you, Emma? So, like,
oh, yeah. They're like, are you in
or we'll throw you off this fucking cliff? Mm-hmm. So, I think they were really prepared. But I was like, y'all didn't really look to see which note you're pulling out of your pocket, and you only have one pocket. So, like, maybe we check a little bit. Or maybe they're color-coded. Who knows? Maybe they were really, really, really organized. So I was like, there's still a lot of margin for error here. But we're going to let it slide because it did look really cool.
Mm-hmm. They're so smooth about it that I'll let them have whatever they want.
Yeah. But Tim is so sad when he realizes he's been got. He's so shook to his core. He's like, I'm the big bad. What do you mean?
What do you mean I got tricked?
What do you mean I got tricked?
Yeah, he fully is losing his marbles, which I love. I mean, we've seen him be unhinged so many ways, but in ways where he thought he was in control. So, I mean, I love to see him reduced to a shivering little trembling worm. Yeah. But you know, I love that.
I wish he could have lived, even though he's the worst person who ever lived.
He gets to go.
I loved
him. He gets to go.
I loved him even though he was objectively bad in every way except for the way he looked. Oh, we didn't even talk about that enough. We can talk about that later. We can talk about it. The Matthew Lillard segment can just be us talking about how good he looks.
Right.
Chelsea, you had some discussion questions, I hear?
I did, and we've covered some of them. One of them was, at what point did Emma team up with Tim? And another one was, why did Emma team up with Tim? I think we've decided it's because they wanted to fuck each other so bad, and because Chris was not fucking her the way that she needed to be fucked.
They had a psychosexual love connection. The psychopath being that they're both psycho.
I mean, I truly think that she and Tim must have been like in with each other from the go, because otherwise it's real convenient that they both came up with murder our roommates or trick our roommates into committing suicide so that we can get that 4.0 at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, she had to have heard that they were doing it for her to be like, oh, this is also a great opportunity for me to do that too, actually. my other question, is she truly loyal to Chris by the end of the film? I mean, she thought that she was going behind his back and colluding with Tim. She knows that he'll do a murder. So is she, she clearly has no compunctions about killing people. You know what I mean? It's not like her morals are literally in play. Do we think that she now finds Chris sexier? Do we think now that Chris's schemes have been completed, his dick is working again, and so their problem actually is not a problem anymore? And also now that they know that they're both killers, they find each other hotter than ever. Like, what do we
know.
Think?
I don't think there is no way to know for sure, but like, I would like to think that she'll hold a candle for Tim, till the day she dies, you know?
She'll always be like, I don't think she's holding a candle for him, but I think she's like, I wish I had gotten to fuck him before he went.
I choose to believe that she's holding a candle for him.
What do you think, Sydney?
Believe it.
Which one?
A candle, obviously.
Candle? Okay. Holding it. She's in love with him, you think?
Yeah. Yeah, look at her hand, Chelsea. It has a candle in it. It's lit, and it will be till the day she dies.
Grabbing the screenshot from the vigil. Yeah. Okay. I think she and Chris maybe stay together forever, but I think it's a marriage of convenience, possibly. They both know they'll do whatever it takes.
Well, that they're only together because they have mutual blackmail on each other. And so, you know, keep your enemies close, baby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think a little bit that brings us to our segments, just because I think everything else that I want to discuss can be contained there within. Our first one, of course, how could this movie be gayer? I think by the end of the film that Rand and Chris and Emma are a throuple, actually.
That's fair, but I think that
on brand too.
We love a throuple, but I just don't like get that vibe because I said what I just said about the candle for the till the end of the earth. I think for sure Chris and Rand are in love, and that is why he was not into her to Emma throughout the entire film. Yeah, he's not into her. It's Carrie Russell. Even if you're doing some sort of weird murder plot, you would, you know.
So she's just locked into being his beard forever?
Just for right now, until they graduate, so they can
Get to Harvard.
Behind, until they go just to Harvard.
Just until gay marriage is legal.
That's why they needed to get to Harvard. That's why Chris and Rand needed to get to Harvard, so they could be far away from everyone that they've ever known and be their true selves together. And wow. Emma's just there. That's it for me. I love throuples. I just don't see it in this case. I think they could have all left this whole problem behind if Rand, Tim, and Chris had just been a throuple from the start, and they could have had study groups together and supported each other, and he never would have gotten that B+.
None of them want to do any hard work. Come on. They want to do one hard work, and it is planning a murder.
They might want to do some other hard work, if you catch my drift, wink face.
But also, like, planning a murder takes a lot of time, commitment, you know.
That's true. I don't want to undercut the effort that went in, because clearly it was a lot.
It takes a level of intimacy that was clearly there between Chris and Rand, because they had to be so secretive. Mm-hmm. Chris had to change his entire personality because, like you're saying, Sydney, he is boring as fuck for the whole movie because he's trying to seem so vanilla. But at the end, when it's revealed that he's in on it, his whole demeanor, the way he speaks, the way he looks changes. He's hotter immediately. His voice is like, yeah, bitch, that kind of vibe.
I'm here.
He's like, oh, Tim, you thought you were so smart. Actually, I'm the hot one. He untucks his shirt right then. It's incredible. What if he had? That would have been pretty funny. Actually, I'm a cool guy, and he pulls off the weirdly sized polo, and he's wearing something, I don't know,
90s contemporary. He, like, no longer has chinos on. Yeah.
Like, there's a chain involved. I don't know.
He's wearing Matthew Lillard's ribbed white tank top from earlier in the film.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Which, by the way, yeah, wowie.
Oh God.
Yeah, I feel like I really think that Chris and Rand have a whole life story that we've never
heard. That said, if Emma was into Tim because he was so the most, and then by the end Chris is like, I'm actually also the most, I just couldn't be who I was before, I think there could be hope for the throuple situation. But also Rand being like, I want to go to Harvard grad school for drama. He again just loves the moment. He just loves to, that's like him being like, I want to go to Harvard for drama for grad school. That's camp. That moment when he reveals that.
I totally glossed over that, and that's amazing. And it is hardcore.
He says it to the end to the counselor. She's like, what do you even want to go to Harvard for? And he was like, maybe drama.
Drama.
I'm going to be an actor. I mean, he's hot enough to do it. He's acting in this movie, so that was a little meta confusing. But
Tim is bisexual.
They're all gay, except for maybe Natalie, but she could be not straight, but it would be, I think, very pushed down.
The Catholicism of it all, unfortunately.
Yeah, she's, whatever would have happened with her, she didn't have time to get there.
Yeah, that's too bad. Too bad. Such a lovely soul. Such a lovely young bisexual soul lost. Terrible. You hate to see it.
Sad.
Okay, now this is the section where we would say, where would Matthew Lillard be in this film? And instead, we're going to be like, these are all the times that he was so hot. The first time he was in the movie, the second time, the third outfit was also really good. The fourth outfit, every single moment, the entire time. The tank top, the gun, when he talked about
the monologue is incredible. The ribbed white tank top is incredible. The sitting on the bed with the blowtorch and the cigar, incredible.
I'm like, should I smoke cigars? Oh my God. Like, forget my health.
I have a couple of times. And one time I felt really cool and chic and I enjoyed it. And then the second time it was gross. So, you know, mixed bag.
It tastes literally so bad. My dad smoked cigars and he would like leave the door open to the house and smoke it on the porch. So then all the smoke would go into the house. And like the smoke from cigars smells so intensely, it would make my stomach hurt. So I have that in the back of my mind. Also, sometimes I find them to be rather large and cumbersome in the mouth, which is a thing that I said out loud. And so I haven't figured out how to smoke them with the sexy panache that Maddie has here.
yeah, I mean, I just think in the cigar blowtorch scene also, he's wearing a shirt that I believe, it's hard to tell exactly, but I believe it says I'm God,
or incredible. I just saw God, I didn't see I'm, but it said
either God. Way
I think it does say I'm God or something like that. Oh, amazing. I want that.
I mean, one of my other favorite things about him in this movie is something that I think can be hard to pull off unless you're a very talented actor. When you are obviously acting as a character because you're in a movie, but then your character is also acting, it can be really hard to strike that balance. But I think when Tim is in the scene where the guidance counselor is there and the dean is telling them about the 4.0, he's doing a really good job of, if you don't know Tim, playing a sort of, he's like laying all the pieces for them to be like, he didn't even want the 4.0. Like, he was actually really upset by that. But if you do know Tim, and we've seen the beginning of this movie, so we know enough about how horrible Tim is at every given point, including that point in the beginning where he was taunting that guy, Jimmy, at the party, who had some sort of learning disability, and he calls him Gilbert Grape also.
Oh, God.
Truly, truly so fucked up. We know exactly how terrible he is. And then so to see him in that scene, like, you so clearly see that Tim is acting without it being like Matthew Lillard is acting. I thought that part was just gorgeous. Great.
Seriously. No, I totally agree with you. Oh, it's just like a masterclass. He's so great in this.
Also, when Rand is dying of the rat poison, but then he like wakes up for one moment to choke Tim. I thought that was good too. I thought that was fun.
Oh, I love that. Also, okay, this is a very important thing I needed to say. I love that little necklace he's wearing. That little cord necklace.
Sometimes men in the right necklace are just so sexy.
That was the right necklace. I recently bought a necklace that is not so dissimilar to that. And I put it on and I was like, this makes me look 47% gayer than I do on the average day. And I think that's why I liked it on him. It gave him a sort of, on men, sometimes it makes you look like you surf. And on women, sometimes it makes you look like you're big gay. And so that kind of a necklace is one of my favorite types. So thank you, Matthew. Thank you, the costume designer. They know what I like. They targeted me personally.
Yeah, I mean, he's just gorgeous. He's horrible, but he's gorgeous every moment of this film.
I love him. I love him.
Never seen a better Matthew Lillard than in this movie.
If I was under the influence of Tim, I could be coerced to commit a murder, I think. I think that I would be so overwhelmed that all of my morals would fall by the wayside. And I
hate
to say that.
You'd go for Emma. Yeah.
No, yeah. I feel like there would be nothing. There's nothing that I could do to stop it from happening. I felt morally corruptible watching this movie, so...
I mean unfortunately dumb bitch, it has to be Tim, because unless it's poor Natalie.
Well,
I would hate to call her the dumb bitch though, because she is psychologically tortured and given misinformation about her circumstances, you know
she could have gone to like the on-campus doctor or
Catholic.
Something just to confirm.
Why would confirm. Why would Emma lie to her? That's bestie.
True.
Emma doesn't really stick up for her that much with the guys, so maybe she should have had some hints that was not in fact bestie. But I don't think it's Natalie.
Feel like it can be Tim, because he also was super smart, and I'm just feeling very defensive of him right now. So
I mean, it can be the police maybe, because they sure were eating out of the palm of Tim's hand for the most part. And I messed up that little joke earlier because it's actually even funnier than she's Canadian. Is she from Canada? Because you know, some Canadian people are born elsewhere. The joke is, she's from Canada, is she Canadian? So that specific police officer is maybe the dumb bitch.
Yes.
That's he's also the one when they're asking questions for the guidance counselor, and she's like, there's not much I can say, confidentiality, etc. And he is like, do those patches work? And she's like, is that your first question? Like, he is wasting every opportunity and just being generally terrible. So I'm prepared to give it to him.
Okay, let's give it to him so we don't have to give it to Matthew, because I love him.
Another just quick nomination, that security guard who has the most incredible speech in the beginning when Rand is first out at the cliffs, either A, scoping them out for crimes later, or B, establishing that when he's upset and drunk, he goes to hang at the cliffs. Because the guy, Ernie, is his name, he walks up and he goes, I'm a private security officer. I have no state or governmental authority. I stand as an ordinary citizen. I have no right to detain, interrogate, or otherwise interfere with your personal private. Anyway, basically all that means that I'm a cop. Like, he basically says, I'm not, a,
like
cop. I'm not a cop. I'm not a cop. Anyway, that means I'm not a cop. Yeah.
So fucking funny. Yeah, it can be him. Let's give it to him.
Ernie.
Ernie. It's Ernie. It's not.
Yeah, because ACAB, always.
But he's idolizing. He's not even getting the salary, but he's doing the whole back the blue thing. But we also get a Nev Campbell mention in that scene, which is nice. A little shout out for our girl.
Okay, does that bring us to Knives Out of Fives?
Yes, and what a funny little setup I have for you. I'll say this first. I was trying to do research for this movie and find old reviews and such. I found very few. Most of them you have to like honestly go through the internet archive to even get them. You got to go way back machine, because they like did not get properly archived from whenever they were first digitized from the 90s or whatever.
It was 1998, not like the beginning of time. What is wrong with the historians of Matthew Lillard's illustrious career?
I don't know, but they just didn't get moved over. So the only one I can find, or one of the only ones that I can find that both had a rating and was still online on its original website was from Empire. And they gave it 4 out of 5 stars, which is pretty good. But if you look at Rotten Tomatoes, you will notice that it has a 0% rating from critics because there are only 8 reviews from critics on the site and they all thought it was rotten.
And they're wrong.
Every single one, they thought it was rotten.
They're so wrong. Oh my God. This makes me mad.
Oh, I am 0%. Zero.
Adds to the Maddie Lily lore. It's fine.
That said, audiences gave it 53% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is still rotten, but it is not a 0%. That means that there were 47 people who thought it was good. They thought it was fresh, you know. And on IMDb, this movie also has a 5.8 out of 10. So again, lost to the sands of time, but some people are finding it and some people are enjoying it. And then some people are wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fully prepared to go first right now. I know that this movie has flaws, i.e., it promotes bad things and there's that whole Gilbert Grape part, but I'm looking past all of that and I'm giving this 5 knives out of 5. This is one of my all time favorite movies. I think watching it again, I felt insane. I already said that. I felt insane. I feel insane right now. This was the best experience of my life in the last week. And that's saying something because it's been an okay week. This movie, I can't believe more people don't know about it. This is like one of my favorite 90s movies. I feel like it's like got the beautiful, beautiful 90s vibes, just perfect. It's a smorgasbord. Kerry Russell's in it. Like I don't, it's almost speaks for itself. But I think that I'm really proud of us for doing a movie that literally no one has ever heard of. Because that's brave, because it means we're going to get fewer downloads. But you know what we're really doing? We're giving a real true gift to Matthew for his whatever it is birthday. I almost said 30th birthday. I just pretend he's our age. Is the same age as me. Because people need to know about this movie. It is so much fun. And so I hope, dear listener, you watch the movie fucking first. And then you watch this movie and you add it to your favorite repertoire of favorite 90s movies. Or maybe it's on your top 15 as well. But yeah, 5 out of 5 for me.
I am going to give this a 4 out of 5. I absolutely loved it. But I didn't like act 2. I did not like. I did not like the middle. I was like kind of bored. I was just like, and it felt really long. I know it's a tight 90, but it just like the middle seemed to drag. And so like had a great time the first 30 minutes. Got kind of bored the middle 30 minutes. And what a fucking ride the last 30 minutes of this movie is. This is absolutely an incredible banger Maddie Lily movie. And honestly, it's probably one of his better performances in a movie, you know?
Yeah.
He acts his little tushy off in this one, y'all.
Yeah. He put his whole Valentussy into this one.
Exactly.
I will give this movie 5 knives as well, purely based on unhinged nature. And also because just in this moment, I remembered something that I put together earlier, which is that like the part about act 2 is that you don't get the payoff it would have had if you didn't have one of those last twists, because you're like, why is he psychologically torturing Chris? Why is he framing Chris? And I said earlier, it was just to like lock him into this scheme so that he couldn't pussy out. That's not it. It's because Tim knows that Rand is going to come back to life, but he still needs one roommate to die by suicide so that he can go to Harvard Law. So they're trying to trick Chris into being that roommate. So like, I think Act 2 is a little troubled because the role that it has in the film just doesn't reach its natural conclusion because it's undercut later on by the fact that Chris was working with Rand. So that it's like hard to appreciate that. It feels a little like wasted time.
I don't know. I feel like it makes the triple twist or the last twist where they're all turning on Tim all the more biting, because the whole middle part of the movie was trying to convince you Tim was being shady, you know? So
yeah,
I like,
no, I agree. I just think, like, from, if you're trying to suss out all the different characters' motivations, you get so lost in it a little bit that it's hard to follow each of the threads.
It's a thinker.
But the unhinged nature to me is the best part about this film. And another thing that I think just makes this film so special and fun and wonderful is not only are they using a lot of the bands that the counselor shouts out in the beginning as being music that suicidal people listen to, like The Smiths and The Cure, but they also have some really incredible music cues throughout. Like, I think right after they have killed, or they're right after Tim and Chris have had the meeting with the counselor and the dean where they're talking about getting their 4.0s, when it cuts to the next scene, it has a song that's like, so you could make a killing, so you could make a killing. And then there's another one later, right after Natalie has died by suicide, where it's the girlfriend in a coma song. And then at the very end, it's the Dead Man's Curve song. Like, the music is so well used as a tool and as a funny, as part of the humor in this film.
Also, shouts out the name. I clocked this in the opening credits. The music supervisor just goes by Shark.
Gorgeous.
It's like music supervision by Shark. And I was like, yes, I love you, Shark. I was like, that stood out to me. And then the music slapped. So yeah, perfect. 10 out of 10. No notes.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's a beautiful film. Wouldn't change a thing. Thank you, Maddie Lily, for giving it to us. Happy birthday, King.
Happy
King. Happy birthday. We love you.
Maybe this will be the year that we make contact. Ooh, 2023.
A lofty goal.
Let's manifest it.
Well, we just have to do what we do with everybody else. Bully them until they love us.
But I don't want to bother him too much, because everybody else, it's like when the week is over and we're doing a different movie, we'll have moved on. You know what I mean? Him, we're in theory going to be bothering forever. So I don't want to be on his bad side.
That's why we have to bother him until he loves us.
I mean, it has worked out well for us so far, I think.
It's all about persistence, okay? Yeah. And also, we're so close. We could totally do it. Are we DMing him? We could be DMing him on Twitter. And that's what
as soon as he notices us.
2023.
Yeah, the first time he notices us, he'll immediately succumb to our charms. I hope.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Christian said he'd put in a good word, so I'm sure that's going to come through any day now. So, next week, we have to move on from Matthew Lillard, but don't worry, we'll still talk about him. We have been trying to find a movie that gives winter, because I don't know if you've noticed, but it is winter right now and there's been unprecedented storming. I actually recommended Geostorm and The Day After Tomorrow, whatever, the one with Jake Gyllenhaal. Wait, that might also be Geostorm. The other one where there's snow, there's a lot of snow, but we did not go that direction. Don't worry. We're not going that way. We're going in a more, I don't know, camp, psychological torture, I don't know, direction. This is a movie that only I have seen, and I don't know how, because it's a classic. It's the 2009 hit, Orphan. Not to be confused with 2007's The Orphanage. That is a very different movie, so don't watch the wrong one. It's Orphan. This is the one with Vera Farmiga, okay? And at this point, I feel like everybody in the world has been spoiled on this one, but let's pretend that we haven't and go in and feel like we're brand new little babies. I watched The Orphan First Kill this fall when it came out. And so basically we're just doing Orphan so we can do Orphan First Kill. That's my secret motivation here.
That's your agenda.
My agenda. I'm really excited for you guys. I think you're going to like it. But I've been so wrong so many times before. Bad news is not a tight 90. It's 2 hours and 3 minutes long. So buckle up, babies. Oof.
Okay.
It's worth it, I think. But let me dehype it. It sucks and you're going to hate it. But it does have winter vibes. The great amount of coats, if you're interested in that.
I do love a good coat.
Yeah, I love a coat.
Yeah, no, I've seen you wear them before, so that makes sense to me. But, okay, we've got a lot of exciting things to announce to you all that have to do with social media. One, as a constant reminder, we've gotten a lot of great reviews lately, and they've been really sweet and nice and make my little heart go pitter-patter and feel very nice and warm and fuzzy, so thank you so much. Keep them coming. We're getting closer and closer to 100 ratings on Spotify, which is my stretch goal for the beginning of 2023. So help us get there. But also, we've teased it for one calendar year. We have a YouTube channel. I don't know if you've heard about it. There is now a handle for our YouTube channel. It's the same as the vast majority, not all, because we're a little disorganized there. Not all of our handles, but it is at @spooky_Tuesday. And starting now, we will be uploading our episodes to YouTube. It's not a full video episode. But it is the audio on YouTube. So if that's something that you like to listen on desktop, I don't know. Oh, or if your friends do not use any of the normal podcasting things, send them the YouTube link. It's very exciting. Why not follow us also on all the rest of our social media too, @spooky_Tuesday on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. I think that's it. And then we also are Spooky Tuesday Pod on Facebook and Tumblr. And finally, we are at Spooky Tuesday on Letterboxd. So thank you for listening. We love you.
Bye, Spookies. Bye, Matthew Lillard.
Hey, Rand, how was West Palm Beach?
Unseasonably cold.
I told you, you should have gone to Las Vegas.
I don't like to gamble.
Spooky Tuesday was created by Monica Height, Sydney Thompson, and Chelsea Duff, and edited by Sydney Thompson. Our gorgeously spooky tunes are all thanks to Tamra Simons, who you can follow on Instagram @CaptainTamra, and our podcast art is by Mary Murphy, who you can find on Instagram @the_moon_OMG.